from Deba. Now, she's from the South Bay, and I'm from the Peninsula, and we get together, and there's, in case y'all haven't heard, in San Jose, there's been a real problem with the police there. Gene did some documentary interviewing people about what's actually going on when police stop people while they're, mostly when they're Hispanic, okay? Just walking around, kind of thing. Dennis, you want to introduce our speaker? I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Malije.
Dennis, did you want to introduce Malije? And let's get Willie up here. Okay. Have you got a prepared statement there, Malije, that you can get started with? Let's test this mic.
It doesn't work.
This one. I'm going to give you this one.
I think this is connected to the recorder.
Okay, there we go. Okay, can I have your attendance? Can I start the panel? This is
all I think. Dennis?
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 Where's the other one?
Dennis is right there. No, no, he's at one of the tables.
Let me tell people what the topic is. So I don't have to put you on the spot.
No, I can.
Our topic is race and gender, right?
Yes.
Is that what we're here about? Okay, so what's going on with race and gender in the media? And I know y'all have conversations, that's fine, but let's make sure we can hear our speakers. And Dennis is going to introduce Malije.
You know what? I'll share the interviews. Okay, so I pick it up from here with these two extraordinary media people, both in their own right, have really been, you know, an example of a way to do media. Willie Radcliffe, the SF Bayview, a weekly, one of the most significant, if not the most significant, it's daily now because it's on the web. So it's a constant flow. They got up a nice piece of blood last night at about, must have been about 12:30 or 1 o'clock. Yeah, from 7 in the morning until, I'm sure they both fall over. Willie and Mary Radcliffe are at it, putting out an alternative, working with extraordinary people, making information available to all of us, working with people like JR and the Block Report, you know, having the kinds of reporting that you will not see anywhere else, representing the Black community and the entire community with information, as we say, that's a human right. So Willie, it is an honor to be here with you. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Malije Razan. It took me 15 years. Did I get it right?
Yes.
It took me 15 years. I've been practicing all night or all day. Can't tell what it is. Malije does Voices of the Middle East and North Africa on KPFA Pacifica Radio Wednesday nights at 7. And it's an extraordinary show about the Middle East. Incredible, great show. Well done, well wrought, very professional. And Malije also produces Your Call on KALW, an excellent show, and that's one you should check out too at 11?
From 11 to noon.
11 to noon every weekday. So, all of you have been introduced. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much. This is about race and gender, but I'm going to, I'm not just going to specifically talk about gender. I just want to mix it up with race and other things, as they say. We are here to celebrate the 10th anniversary of Indebe. Happy birthday. So I was thinking to myself, what is it about Indebe model and the kind of journalism that it promotes and that could be used about the issues in other parts of the world, what we hear and what we write about, especially about Middle East and Iran and where I come from. I have been a journalist for about 7-8 years. And I have been, before that, I have been an activist, and I'm still considering myself an activist, but more a journalist, I have to say, because that's what I spend my time on. So in these 10 minutes that I have, I'm going to try to give, to be very brief, and maybe we can continue this conversation later. One of the stories that I saw on InDebate today was the killing of Derek Jones, who was shot and killed by the Oakland Police Department on Monday, November 8th. And on November 11th, family members of Jones and Oscar Grant joined together to march to the Footway BART station, the site of Grant's shooting, where he was killed. So this story, and the way it was linked to Oscar Grant's killing, is not just an accident. And it's not just about two young black men who was killed by Oakland police and the BART police. Giving attention to these killings and staying on these stories by writing about them, about their lives, about their hopes and disappointments, opens a window from which we can understand history of racism in this country, class structure, and the state controls in the way that they portray Oscar Grant and other victims, or the way that they cover it. These stories usually end up as a number on page 8 of a section of a newspaper. I remember the day the verdict was coming down, I was at KLW, I was getting ready for my show, and I was trying to see how San Francisco Chronicle is covering it, because we were going live and I wanted to make sure that we give it coverage and we have David D on our show. And I kept looking for the story, and since I can't see without my glasses, I put on my glasses and I could still not see the story. It was really a blip. It was an alert on the right side, and it was in red, so I had a harder time even seeing that. So this basically gives you an overall picture of how important these stories are. And I was amazed during the Oscar Grant, the trial of Metairie, that whenever every newscaster, and I have to say, unfortunately, even KPFA News to a certain extent, the starting line was an unarmed black man. And the name followed a few sentences later. So he was an unnamed black man. And that told a lot about the way the stories are covered. So I want to talk a little bit about invisibility and what we can do to bring about change through giving voices to people that are mostly marginalized and invisible. And that's why I gave that example. This example can apply, this example can give us an understanding and shows us how media can shape views and how it can create two-dimensional characters and numbers that we can never understand or know about or care to know about. So this applies to how we can shape our views and those of our viewers and readers about other parts of the world by telling their stories that nobody gets to read and people that we do not get to hear from. And this, I have to say, this criticism does not apply only to corporate media. I think progressives are also guilty about how we tend to forget and we tend to get wrapped up in the political theater that has been handed to us. A few days ago, I interviewed Anna Butman, a war correspondent who has written about war zones in Afghanistan, Iraq, Kashmir, Palestine. She has tried to give voice to those who don't have voice. And she gave me a quote of Haitian-American author Edric Danticat. She says, "There are timeless waters, endless seas, and a lot of people in this world whose names don't matter to anyone but themselves." And this applies to people in every corner of the world. But I'm going to talk about Iran, and I'm going to do it very briefly. I think I have only 5 minutes. When we utter the word Iran, and even if I ask you about Iran, probably two things come to mind: nuclear program and post-election protest. And depending on where one stands in the political spectrum, a certain narrative develops, and it takes a life of its own. But what about those invisible people who do not matter to anyone but themselves? Who's going to tell their stories? And we, how do we get to know those stories as two-dimensional cardboard-like characters who are used to be manipulated by different state and non-state actors? June 2009 election, presidential election in Iran, which I declare it was fraudulent, it was stolen, received the worldwide attention in the main corporate media, and a counter-narrative started to develop in the progressive media. From CNN to New York Times to Washington Post, the headlines saturated with the news of protests highlighting the case of Nedo Abbas-Sultan, an innocent bystander young woman who was murdered in the hands of Iranian regime thugs. But this is the way Guardian, a liberal newspaper in London, described her. In the footage, because there was a little video that came out and it was repeated over and over again all over, especially on CNN. In the footage, she's wearing jeans, white trainers, a dark shirt, and a headscarf, suggesting a middle class and a relatively emancipated young woman. So this is the best. So if this is not Orientalism, I don't know what it is. So this gives you an idea of the best of them, of how, and I have to say Guardian did excellent reporting and did, you know, very well, but there are streaks of Orientalism and not understanding the other that comes across. On the other hand, some of the anti-war community flocked to support the Iranian regime and shield it from criticism. Some groups, and in the anti-war movement, in the peace movement, they wrote articles saying, "Get over it, Ahmadinejad won." And some said protesters were funded by CIA or people who are leading the protest or symbolizing the opposition movement are being funded by the West. And just some people just stayed silent. And I kept hearing from some activists and journalists around me saying that the situation in Iran is too complex. I don't understand it. And it was very peculiar to me that whenever we cannot understand or we fail to understand other people, we use this word complex. Everyone basically tried to mold what was happening in Iran at a time that we could go to war with it and we could attack it for her own and his own agenda. So, as we write a story about the torturing Guantanamo Bay detainee or a killing of Oscar Grant, we should also remember that there are the same injustices happening in other parts of the world. And how we connect with those people and their struggles will shape our views of those who we are writing about and those readers who are reading our stories. And that can be a window through which we can understand global affairs, diplomacy, and geopolitical processes. And since we have raging grannies here, I want to just finish with one story which can break every possible stereotype that some of you might have in this room, or hopefully you won't. A mother, Parvin Erabi, in 2005, she started with some other mothers, Mothers for Peace, a group that was against the war in Iraq. They wrote a letter to the United Nations and they said, "What happened to Iraq, we do not want to happen to us." And she was one of the mothers who protested, who pursued war, not just for Iran, but also for Iraq. She was against war. In 2009, her son was one of those murdered, 19 years old. She was killed by Iranian regime thugs. It took her 1 month to find the body of her son. They did not allow her to have a funeral. They raided the funeral. And a few months ago, when she wanted to celebrate her first year, the first anniversary of his death, they did not allow him to have a public meeting, have a public wake to celebrate his life. And I interviewed that mother. And it's very interesting that the story of that mother that I interviewed with on KTFA prompted a mother in Oakland, Carolyn Scar, a woman who listens to our show, to write a letter, to write a poem about mothers who lose their sons and daughters in war. So I think when we look at any conflict zone, any war zones, it's very important to learn about politics and macro politics through the lives of people on the ground. And that's why I'm here with you all to celebrate the 10th anniversary in debate, because that's exactly what it's doing. It's linking the social justice issues in Oakland to what's happening in Palestine, to what's happening in Iran. And I want for all of you, hopefully, to be vocal, to speak about atrocities of Iranian regime, what it's doing to young men and women, activists, journalists, workers, teachers, they're torturing them in prison. Meanwhile, work to stop the war and stop the sanctions on Iran. We live in a multidimensional world. So should be our tactics. We are the one who should set the narrative. We should not allow other people to set it for us. Thank you so much.
My name is Willie Radcliffe, and I publish the San Francisco Bayview newspaper. And we have a website, and we put stories on every day, especially hot stories. And we get a lot of comments. But I originally started as an activist for economics. Most of the people you see, can you hear me out there? You hear me all right?
Yeah. I'll stand way back in the middle.
How is this? Better? Thank you. Well, one of the things I looked at, because I'm a general contractor, and I look at people having a job and opportunities for their kids and for their family and for their community. And most of the people that you see now that's in prison, they didn't have a job. Only the white collar get a chance to have a job and steal and be able to stay out of prison. Of course, one of the things that I push all the time is to make sure that families have a job. If you expect the kid to do well, then the family has to do well. Actually, we went in to the news business just to promote economics for people that don't have jobs, especially for minorities and women who never wind up really having contracts and opportunities here in this country. And then, of course, we look over and see what our country's done in Haiti. You know, in other words, they want those people to work for $2 a day. And here, America and Canada and France, who are still holding the grudge by getting their tail kicked against the Haitians. Now why aren't they doing something over there to keep all those people from dying? So let's see what you go on. And because they can exploit them by working them for $2-3 a day, treat them like they're not human. But not just Haiti, we got the same thing going on here. When you go around, look at every construction job you see. How many people of color and women you see out there, especially African American women? A lot of times they'll try to use other groups to say, well, hey, we got somebody, so if two or three other groups not getting anything, that's too bad. But that's really what we're about. And we're really happy to see that indie media stepped up to the plate 10 years ago and got started where people could at least speak out through in the media and didn't have to worry about it too much. You know, they're princes, so it's up to you what you put up there. And they have been real helpful in letting people be able to bring up their ideas about what's going on and write it where other people can read. But we're doing that online now. We get comments from people. Hot stories came out when the last shooting over here in Oakland came out. We put something on the next day. A really good hot story was written by Misha Arizar in San Francisco. A real good story about it, because the Chronicle and the police department, they had already made up their story and put it out. You know, he was reaching for something. Every time one of us get killed, we're reaching for something. You know. So I want to see people come together and stand up first, because that's where it all starts, with economics. Your kid's not going to do well if your family don't have a job. And the family not going to do well if they don't have a job. So what do? They put us in jail, they shoot us in the back, and they keep getting away with it all over the country. I'm really glad to see Oakland step up to the plate here. It's kind of leading in the United States. And more than that, even across the country, you know, out of the country. People are looking at what's happening here in Oakland. People are standing up and saying, yeah, you know, we're tired of this. First, we don't get a job. There's more of us in prison than anybody else, especially African Americans. But people of color in prison. You know, the war on drugs was nothing but a war on poor folks. That's all it was. And they spent all of that money, put people in jail, and now they're cutting schools, you name it. It's being cut. Schwarzenegger wants to go back and cut some more. I know how in the hell we ever got him. But, you know, that's what we got to deal with. You can look at my paper. I supported Gene Corn. Most of the people around here, a whole lot of the sellouts, they jumped up. They're going to support the guy that they feel that they can get next to and get a little bit for them. They didn't really care about the community. One thing made me supportive is when she stood up and fired 80 cops. Right, that tells me something about certain things that you do, you know. But the black, all the preachers, and especially in the African American community, and the sellouts, they jumped and got behind whatever. Well, we know what he's going to do. First thing he's talking about is putting the cops back in. So really what beat him was the people out here in the flatlands. They don't like nobody to support the cops, what the cops have done in the community around here. You know, they are occupying force in the community. That's exactly what they are, and we need to change that. But we need to work together to make that we all employed. That's where we should use our strength to make sure that we all have jobs and opportunities that we should have in this country. And of course, media can help in that. Let's write about what the unemployment rate is in Oakland. Probably out here in East Oakland, like maybe Hunter's Point, between the age of 19, I'll go back to 18, 18 and 37, we have a 55% unemployment rate. And I'm sure you got the same thing in here. And most of the major cities have the same thing. So if we don't do anything about that, it just makes it much harder for us to advance, keep our kids from killing each other, keep the police from shooting our kids. Now, when Baby Hunter's Point, when the shipyard had all those people working, we had 10,000 people out of the ship, out of the neighborhood, was working at the Hunter's Point shipyard. We didn't have no bars. We had one attic in the country, in the county. Nobody locked their doors because everybody was working. Everybody had a job. People like to go out and have a good time, eat well, live well, take care of their family. They don't have time. But if you don't have no job, sooner or later, you're going to do something to somebody or anybody, because you're going to eat. You need water. You know, that's survival. So that's what we should be fighting to increase our standard of living in cities like Oakland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, all the cities throughout the country, and make sure that we stop police brutality and occupation of our community. They ain't occupying other communities. It's Those people over there are working. They got a paycheck. We don't. I don't want to take up much more time. I don't know what's happening here, but that's what we got involved in the news media for, to carry that out. Neither me or my wife went to journalism school. You know, but I tell you, we went to hard knock school of seeing people discriminated against, put in jail, locked up in prison. How is it that we're supposed to be a free democracy? And we put more people in jail than anybody in the world. Anybody.
Longer sentences than anybody else.
Longer sentences. And you know, and here we got a union, you know, that's really got so powerful that they could run the whole system here in California, the prison guards.
That's true.
So those are the things that we need to be talking about, working together to change, and you'll see our communities start being so run down, people killing each other over crumbs, and see you get a grudge when that thing starts going. You kill one of mine, I kill one of yours. But you look back and see what it was about, it really wasn't about anything. It's about the system locking us out, and our kids start killing each other. When there were jobs, opportunity, you didn't see it. Nobody was killing each other. But that's what people fight over. So we don't just have a war going on around the world in Afghanistan and in Iraq and with all the other places America's at. It's what's going on. We have it right here in our own neighborhoods. We have the same war going on. We are occupied, and we need to do something about it. And that means working together and using the news media. You know, you can go on there and put stuff on yourself. Now, they made it much easier. You know, people go on Facebook with stuff, and you see something change right away because too many people seen it. But how many people we have out there are put out the real news? Sure not going to listen to the Chronicle and your favorite paper over here. And even some of the black papers, you know, they won't open their mouth. They're scared. You don't get nowhere being scared. Nowhere. Stand up. You feel better when you do stand up. You be a man or woman. Stand up and demand the rights for your kids, your grandkids, and generations to come after us. Thank you.
Oh, I think if G just holds on here with his nose,
he'll be all right.
I think that might be icy. Puna Bomb says free food back here. Thank you, Puna Bomb.
Yeah. I've been dying a long time.
It's very good.
Thank you.
Very true. Very true. Very true. Very true. Very true. Very true. It's all about jobs.
Oh, man. It's about being able to
feed your family.
Hi, my name is Jean Delisle. I work in the South Bay. I actually live in the East Bay.
Okay.
I live in Berkeley. But I was raised in Bayview. So I used to read that paper all the time. But I never went to journalism school. I learned video through Silicon Valley D-Wing, but it's all taught by community organizers. And I'm also in the artist collector. It's one of Oceania. We work with Pacific Islander women and Chowchilla, queer Pacific Islander women. So I can't go in because I was formerly incarcerated, so I can't go in. That's actually how I got into media, because I used to go over there because it was kind of like a therapeutic group. Their editorial meetings, they have open editorial meetings every Tuesday. Now, I was going back and forth from San Jose to San Francisco. I used to get in a lot of trouble. I've been in the system ever since I was 11. And when I went in jail, probably like the second time, I got out and I was released. And then Raj, my boss, he hired me when I got out because I was about to go in because I couldn't pay the the fees, like right when you get released from county or whatever, they give you fees, and you can't get the job because you already have a record. So it's kind of like a cyclical thing. It's a cycle, you know. You get out, they say you gotta pay $6,000 within the month, and then you can't even get the job. So you can't really get. You're gonna do the same thing that you were doing before, and it's, you go back into. So they gave me a job. I'm not a writer or whatever. I'm not a videographer. I've been doing videos. I write stories. I just like to be called a good community member. I don't know. But, I don't know what I'm... we're supposed to be talking about race and gender. So what's going on in San Jose is the police department. We've been putting out a lot of media on them. And it's crazy because you see how powerful media is when the police try to do the same thing to you. So they put out a video. I think they paid it with tax people's money. They put out a video on my boss talking at the city council meeting, trying to defame his character. I just thought that was crazy because they felt threatened by all the media that we put out on them. We do a cop watch. I know they do cop watch out here. We have folks that do cop watch out there. And we started this justice center. We're a legal justice center because when people complain to the police about the police, they're complaining to the police, so the complaints don't go anywhere because they're just complaining to the same people that just beat them. So we started a makeshift complaint center. So a lot of people, they come in on Sunday. It's all free. It's legal advice. We have a cool public defender. He's been working in Santa Clara. He was a public defender for 25 years in Santa Clara County. And he volunteers his time over there pro bono. And so all these families who have issues within the justice system, they come in, and all these community members who have been helped, they stay to help other families in the justice system. Because I think a lot of times families are victims of police brutality or whatever. They just need someone who's been there to support them. So right now we're doing a campaign called. It's community members with a message to the next police chief, because I'm not sure about Oakland or San Francisco, but in San Jose, the only person that's supposed to hire the new San Jose police chief is the city manager, and there's no community input, so we're trying to put pressure on the city to allow community input for the next San Jose police chief, because San Jose, I think, has the highest related police shootings and deaths, I think. I'm not sure. Even tasers, too. They just love to shoot people. I don't know what's wrong with them. I don't know what else.
That's great.
She's a great person, but yeah, I guess what they disbanded. I don't know if we had anything to do with it.
Do you guys know about the Raging Grannies? Because I see them everywhere. They're out there.
We brag about ourselves. we are everywhere. So. Okay. I'd be interested if you guys have any questions for each other before
yes. First of all, I think I'm really happy that I met you, because on Thursday I'm doing the show on KLW exactly about the topic that you're working on, called What is Justice? And it came out of Oscar Grant's on the verdict. So I want to invite you on that show to be a guest, which I just wanted to say. And I also, if you can, talk a little bit about your experience. You said you started going through this quote-unquote justice system kind of cycle over and over again. To the degree that you can talk about it, I just wanted to ask what your experience was like, what kind of women you met in prison, and tell us a bit about their stories.
Yeah, thank you. I was in the system. The first time I got locked up was right before I graduated high school. I was pretty good at living a double life, because I lived in a project, and I was pretty smart, you know, read a lot of books, and like 2 weeks before I graduated, I got locked up for the first time. And then I got locked up for the first time. And the second time, I turned 21 in jail. A lot of the women, I was pretty young. Every time I went in, they called me, like, they would say I was a baby. They're like, but it was amazing because all these women, I have, like, mad love for these women that I met because most of them are mothers. I met a lot of mothers who were meth addicts. And I, like, they would always talk to me, and they called me Dr. Phil because I'm a very social person. I'm a good listener. I think I'm a good listener. But I would talk to these women, and their stories were, you know, I always felt sorry for myself because I was poor. I always like to blame, like, the system. I was like, fuck that. I get to do whatever I want because I was poor. But when you hear these women's stories, you just, like, they've been through sexual abuse, rape, everything. I never went through sexual abuse, rape. Thankfully, you know, God willing. But you just hear these women's stories, and their mothers, they have so many children. So I met a girl that was, like, she's 27, but she looked 17, and she had 8 children, and she only knew where 2 of them were. And she was addicted to meth. Like, the first time she smoked meth was when she was 8, and she was forced by her mother, who was a meth addict. And I remember all these women's stories. I used to draw all these pictures for them, and that's how I was cool with everyone, because I used to just draw their pictures. So they used to always, like, sit by me while I drew their family's pictures and tell me, like, their whole life story. Because they would look at their kids and tell me, oh, this is, he's in Linda, whatever, he wants to become this. And it's crazy, because I walk around and I look at people and I always wonder, like, what their story is. Yeah. I don't know.
Questions
for each other before I open it up to the public here?
Well, I really don't I really don't have any questions at all. Just I learned from both of them. And I would like a little bit more from you about your first arrest. You know, in other words, when was you first stopped by the police? Most of the kids in Baby Hunter's Point, by the time they're 6 or 7 years old, they've been accosted by the police. You know, they just love to go after kids. So, would you, about yourself and any friends that you had, you know, what was it that the police used on kids, and what age did they usually start at and question kids and, you know, otherwise harassing young kids?
Well, on the specific block that I was kind of raised on, it was Oakdale. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Oakdale, but
I live one block.
They had a ganging junction. They had a ganging junction that was said that a list of people, they couldn't be around, like 3 of them couldn't be together. There was a curfew just on my block. You couldn't come outside at like 10. I knew, like, my cousins were on that list, I know them in a different way. Like, the way that police see people, they don't see them in a humane way. So I know my cousin in a cousin way, you know. I was like, what the hell, why they put him on the list? Well, I guess, I don't know. And, I always get stopped by the police. They always think I'm like a Samoan guy or something. I'm like, I don't know. I think it's my 2 braids or something. But I remember when I was younger, I used to get stopped a lot when I used to dress like in all black. I used to dress in all black with a black hoodie. And then now I pretty much dress differently now that I'm older. And now they still stop me because they say, do you live around here? I was like, yeah, I live. I'm going to visit my auntie right now. And they stop me now because they think that I don't live around there and I'm about to pick up some dope or something. I don't know.
Let's open it up. And if you have a question, you're not real shy, come up here speaking to the mic because it'll help a lot. All right. Who's got questions for Willie or Gene or Malia? Come on up. Nobody who comes to Indie Bay events is allowed to be shy, right? You're going to get your picture taken. You've got a big old video cam. And what's your name?
My name is Jeff Watson.
And you write your contact.
Thank you for coming.
It's not so much a question as just a comment for both Willie and Jean. You had mentioned in regards to the, if you had more people that were more gainfully employed, there'd be fewer people that were in prison. And Jean, you mentioned about paying fees after you had to get out. That's part of the entire problem, is the prison system has become a corporate-run, for-profit venture. And so these big corporations are wanting to keep people as oppressed as possible so that they make more money by keeping people in the prisons. And then they're charging people to get out of prisons. I mean, this is insane. There's just no way to continue that. And so you've got the big corporations on one side, the average American citizen over on the other side, and never the two shall meet type of a thing. And I think that's actually one of the problems that, one of the things that's going on right now is that they want to keep it that way so that they can keep as much profit in their pockets as possible. Meanwhile, we're suffering and I don't see an end to it. I'm wondering about your overall opinion as far as how you can see us pulling out of that type of situation.
Privatization of everything seems to run amok here.
Well, it's one thing we have to do is be involved. It's way more of us than it is of them. And they're counting on us going against each other, not pulling together. We have the power if we use it. You see who I got elected for an open mayor. That should tell you something. If everybody involved, you can change things. That's all we have, is each other. You know, if you're hungry and I'm hungry, we're going to figure out how we're going to get some bread. You know, but you have to be involved. You got to vote. When they look and see how many voted within an area, they just write you off right then. Because you're not doing anything. But once they look and see that your voting numbers have shot way up here, all of a sudden, well, we better give them a little piece of something. You know, so it's us. If we can learn to work together, be involved all the time about your future and your children's future. If we all involved, we can change, and we way bigger than the Tea Party. We can change. So that's what it's going to take, is being involved. If every one of us involved on changes, we can do it.
Now,
well, they're trying to rescind it.
No.
Oh, well, they're working with the insurance company, and it looked like we got to sue the insurance company. We took out liability, and, well, actually, it's all over auto insurance. Now, the liability insurance, that's huge. Well, we've been at that for quite some time. But the same company that we got commercial auto insurance for an old pickup. And they said it was late, hadn't got in, they hadn't been notified us, you know. They've been looking for a way to try to get rid of us all this time.
But, tell everybody what it is.
Well, it's the new library. And maybe on this point, it's a $5.1 million job. And you never had a black general in the Bay Area. Right. To do that size of a job. The largest one I know of was $4 million was did out at the airport some 12 years ago by African American, and they ran him out of business. So anyway, we're fighting them now. As a matter of fact, we're filing something against the insurance company. And if we have to, we will also file suit against the city. So we're challenging. I've always challenged. I come from a challenging family. We challenged down in East Texas, and the Ku Klux Klan did not visit our neighborhood.
Right.
There's no other way to go. Matter of fact, the sheriff told us that if you go down there, you come out in a pine box. We've been there 200 years, Nope. And down in East Texas, along the Louisiana line, the river separated us. We own our own land. I never worked for nobody until I left home with my father. So, but anyway, that's what it takes. So we are challenging it. We can use the media support in making sure that our people, how many women general contractors you see out there got any work? You know, it's just not African American. But it takes all of us moving to make sure that the economics come to our community. And actually, if you take a look, especially in San Francisco, at, let's see, yeah, it's 14B. It's the new law that says, you know, that they got rid of the one where they use race. Now it's race neutral, but they made it stronger. It says you shall help with insurance, funding, and finance. And that's what they've been keeping an eye on. Even with the law being there, they're going to test you. They don't want to do it. They've been trying to, otherwise they set it up to fail. But every time they set up a roadblock, we went around it. And so they just finally come out and says, well, they gave us one day to get a certificate. They knew we had insurance. One day, we got the certificate one day late, and they sent out a rescission notice. But that's the fight. That's the kind of fight we're in, and that's what we have to use. So far, we've been being real professional and real nice with them, but hey, the bomb's coming. We're not going to let them stop us, and hey, we could use your help out there, because they've done it to the community, not just to me. Because right now, I'm 78 years old, but I want to see some change in the few years I've got left. So there ain't nothing I won't go up against. And we all need to get that way, and you'll see some changes going on. Thanks.
I just wanted to say something about what you said. I agree with Willie, but I think there is a question that I don't have an answer for, but I want to just pose it to you guys. When I was covering the midterm election and California, different propositions and races and all that, I realized that, for example, Prop 23, that so many people really fought to defeat, and they did, right? But it took $31 million from environmental groups to actually go after this. And they had, I mean, so many people. I mean, I was just talking to students, for example, in Sacramento State. They were active. There were so many people, but it took $31 million. For which probably, was it 21 or 22? I can't remember. The two-third majority one, the budget one. The Teachers Association themselves, they spent $11.6 million to try to defeat it. Just imagine, 60,000 teachers last year, another 14,000 this year. Just imagine how far that money can go. So it seems like we have come to a point that in order to fight money, you have to fight it with money in a certain way, partly because of the media. So what Willie says, it becomes more important, and I think it's a long-term issue that we progressives have to think about, that instead of reacting, how we can be proactive in order to organize, to be able to create change. And with sadness, I have to say that I think it's more possible at the local level as opposed to national level, because it takes $4 billion to create change, quote unquote. But here, with door to door and getting the locals involved, you can get a mayor for San Francisco. Or you can actually create a movement around Oscar Grant that can have ripple effect in other communities across the world. So I think we have to think about tangible ways that we can create change on the local level, which is not going to take tens of millions of dollars.
Well, I certainly couldn't agree with them more. You can do something right here that will impact Washington. But you gotta do it where you live. San Francisco, Oakland, Los Angeles, Fresno. That's where it starts at. You know, if you get a change here, because they just get the federal money and spend it the way they want. and leave you out. So we have to fight right here, and everybody should vote. I had somebody in my house didn't vote, I'd kick them out and be under the bridge. Anyway, thank you.
Well, thank all three of you.
We have time for one last question, and if we don't have more questions, I'll start announcing what's happening next. Do we have any more for this wonderful panel? Thank you all so much. Okay. And I'll see you on the streets, okay? This is, you know, I've met some of the best people I know on the streets. You might meet them online, but until you really see them and meet them and hug them, you don't know your people. Okay, our next workshop is going to be with Bradley of Santa Cruz Indie Media. He's going to be back there by the bar, and he's going to be talking about street photography. Oh, was that a nice segue right into that, right? You know, you might see yourself on Indie Bay. We do make sure that we don't show faces of people who look like they might be doing something that might be an arrestable offense. But we want to document what's really happening, okay? And Bradley has got a lot of experience with street photographer, and so he'll be talking back there. Now, up here in just the next few minutes, at 3:30, we're going to give time for a little bathroom break, and also to go around the tables. We're going to be having objectivity and the economy in the media. One of our speakers couldn't make it. That's Renee Yang Giesler, but... is JR here from Block Report Radio? All right, I saw him. Okay, get ready to come on up in just a minute. Kalia Ramirez, author. I've got your bio too. And of course, Tiny. I got a long bio on Tiny. So if you three would start kind of making your way up here. And those of you who want to go to the street photography workshop, that starts in 5 minutes. And we'll start in this room with objectivity and economy in the media at 3:30 sharp. All right? So be back. Food Not Bombs is over here. We want to thank our tablers. I want you to know right over here, Joey of PM Press says he takes credit cards, okay? I was teasing him about that. He's gone mainstream. He takes credit cards. In the back room where Food Not Bombs has free food, we also have a couple of tablers back there. They're kind of stuck back there. I want you to be sure and visit them. One is Park, which is Prison Activist Resource Center. And the other one is a group called the 100 Committee, and they are for the defense of people who are arrested around the Oscar Grant activism in the streets. So be sure that you don't miss those tables back there, and then, of course, all the ones in this room, too. All right, 5 minutes for a break, and then we'll be back in this room or in the workshop. There's also some more brownies and chai tea over here, courtesy of the Rage and Grannies. JR is here, so we're just waiting on Tiny. Oh, Tiny's manning her booth. And let's get our audience back in here. I let everybody go to the bathroom. That was probably a bad idea, huh? I was afraid if they didn't go, they might wet their pants here, do a granny on us, yeah. Okay, in the workshop room, Bradley Stewart just went into the workshop room to teach about street photography. And join me on the stage here is J.R. Valray. Is that right? Did I say that right, J.R.? Okay. Of Block Report Radio and also SF Bayview. Tiny is going to make her way up here. We've got people in the audience upstairs, so we know you can hear us. All right. Okay, now Ray is working the room to tell people that we're getting ready to start our next panel.